Tiger's got 152 yards. Should be just a nice, comfortable 9-iron for him. They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Oh! He went in!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Mickelson magic at 50.
Koepka, a major champion.
In your life have you seen anything like that?
For tournament predictions and conversation on all the storylines across the PGA Tour, this is On the Green, WFUV's exclusive golf podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ryder Cup special episode of On the Green, your WFUV Sports home for all the stories from around the world of golf. Tucker Austin here alongside Lydia Perner, Thomas Tisdale, and Vanessa Kosuda. We've got Henry Wolf behind the glass on production for us this afternoon. Today is Friday, October 3rd, 2025. Just 4 days ago, on September 28th, the 45th Ryder Cup came to a close at Bethpage Black on Long Island in New York, and what a finish it was. Emotions ran high, players on both teams were amped, fans brought a ton of energy, at times maybe too much, but Team Europe won the Cup outright with a 15-13 victory. They needed 14 points to retain, and they got one more than they needed, so they properly won it over the USA. Team USA struggled over Friday and Saturday. They made a furious comeback on Sunday. We'll get into all of that, but first off, how's everyone doing today? Lydia, we'll start with you. What's up?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, Yankees won last night, so that's good news in the sports world. Ryder Cup was something I was looking forward to for a long time, so even though the U.S. lost, it also just stings that it's over because it was such a fun weekend. Just, you know, walking around New York City and just seeing everyone in their Ryder Cup gear. And my whole company, like, went to the Ryder Cup, and hearing that about that, too, and how that they made it to Sunday, so it was good for the network. So a lot of goods to come out of the Ryder Cup, except for the actual Ryder Cup itself being the U.S.'s. But
yeah, except for the result for all the American fans out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Thomas?
I'm doing pretty good. It finally starts to feel like fall again. Like, I was getting sort of tired of sweating.
Another 80-degree day tomorrow, though.
Yeah, so we're entering the false fall now, or we've just had it. But it's refreshing to have to put on pants in the morning and put on, like, a little quarter zip. So I'm enjoying the weather change. It's a shame that the Ryder Cup and the golf season overall is over, but overall I'm doing pretty well.
Vanessa?
I'm doing good, yeah. I'm actually golfing tomorrow, so it's gonna be a nice day.
Where?
I honestly don't remember. I just know it's an hour away.
Oh, okay.
But it's supposed to be a really, really nice course.
All right.
And
I thought you were going to Van Cortlandt.
Please don't get me started on Van Cortlandt. But Moshaloo is usually my go-to. Hot take, anyway. But yeah, no, I'm good. You know, I was at the Ryder Cup on Sunday. I'm looking forward to talking about that a little bit. You know, the in-person atmosphere and first pod. So I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Welcome. It's a four-person On the Green, the likes of which I have not seen in a very long time. Very excited about it. I know Will Talent and Jack Warner would be very proud of us right now.
Jack's having a good day today after the Red Sox lost last night.
He liked a couple of my tweets, so I was happy
about
that.
Text him about that. Just ask him how he is.
But, yeah, let's get right into it. We got to break down all 3 days of this Ryder Cup, and we got a couple of, like, overarching storylines that we're going to get into. But just moving chronologically, we'll start with day one. The foursomes in the morning, the EU took it 3-1. I mean, the first 2 days of this tournament were just all Europe. John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton won 4-3 against DeChambeau and Justin Thomas. Ludvig Åberg, Matt Fitzpatrick won 5-3 over Scottie Scheffler and Russell Henley. A little bit of an upset there. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick, very solid, but Ludvig Åberg on the younger side against the number one golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler. We'll get into how his whole tournament went as well. But also on day one, Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood with the 5-4 victory over Colin Morikawa and Harris English. And then the U.S. did get 1 point in that morning session on day one. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay won 2-up against Robert McIntyre and Victor Hovland. In the four ball, it went much the same for Europe. Another 3-1. Raman Straka beat Scheffler and J.J. Spaun 3-2. Fleetwood and Rose won 1-up over Ben Griffin and Bryson DeChambeau. A 6-5 win for Åberg and Rasmus Højgaard. A 6-5 win for Cameron Young and Justin Thomas over Åberg and Højgaard. Huge win for Young and Thomas. Cameron Young had a great tournament. And then that fourth match in the afternoon and on Friday was tied between McIlroy, Lowry, Sam Burns, and Patrick Cantlay. For me, day one, I mean, like I already said, EU was so dominant. And I was kind of baffled by that McIlroy and Fleetwood versus Morikawa English pairing. I am not really sure, and that pairing continued to happen with Morikawa and English playing against McIlroy in some capacity. Wasn't really sure why Keegan Bradley put that together and wasn't trying to get Scotty more matchups with Rory. But Thomas, we can start with you here. What was a big takeaway out of day one for you with the EU finishing the day up 5.5 to 2.5?
I think the major thing is just the course setup was obviously favored for the U.S., but the thing is that you win these tournaments on the greens, and it just felt like the Europeans just, I don't know what happened, because they all get access to the pin locations on that Tuesday before, or maybe it's the Monday before. And it just felt like the EU had, you know, maybe a month to prepare these greens while the U.S. were seeing them for the first time. So, frankly, that's the thing that just confused me the most about this, was just the U.S. just did not seem to be able, throughout pretty much the entire tournament, except maybe on Sunday, just could not find their stroke on the greens. And some of the matchups were, frankly, a little just confusing why Keegan Bradley chose the matchups the way they did. But overall, just a really disappointing for the U.S. team. And EU was just really dominant, just up and down the roster. Just they played with a lot of camaraderie, and I thought that reflected in the result.
I think actually hindsight looks better for Keegan Bradley than actual during the tournament, because in my opinion, like, sometimes there's got to be throwaway matchups, and when you're playing against Rory and Tommy, like, that's a, no matter who you put out there, it's going to be a close match. So I feel like his thought process there is, don't waste, you know, Scotty or some of the better American golfers, because that one might be a loss no matter what, and it would stink if you have, you know, one of your best guys on that. I think that was the thought process behind that pairing playing against Rory and Tommy Fleetwood. But definitely, like, the most disappointing thing, Thomas, you were getting at, just the putting the first 2 days was terrible, and there was nothing overly difficult about these greens. I get it, it's a long course, but once you get onto the green, like, just you can't be missing putts short, or the amount of, yeah, just like, yeah, Scotty
leaving them short from like inside 10
yeah,
feet.
Yeah, Scotty had a horrible putting days the first 2 days. I mean, Sam Burns is like the American's best putter, and I don't think he made like a single big putt. So it was all,
he knocked down like one on day three, but I think that was it. There was like one nice putt from like 20 plus feet away. It was like, all right. But that was when they were like trying to make that huge
that
comeback.
Yeah. So everything felt like so big in that moment. Yeah. But yeah, it was just disappointing, because seeing what the U.S. did day three, like, if you get, I mean, one more point, one more win out of the first 2 days, like, you, that, it's the U.S. is to lose at that point. So that aspect of it definitely stinks.
Yeah, and so really, I was shocked at how Scottie Scheffler struggled so much during this whole process. He's the first American ever at the Ryder Cup in its current format to start 0-4 in four straight matches. He picked up a point finally on Sunday in a 1v1 during singles with Rory McIlroy. But I mean, like, so two losses on day one for Scotty. One of them was they just got blitzed, he and Henley did, by Åberg and Matt Fitzpatrick. I just it's weird because on the one hand, you want to try and blame Keegan Bradley and be like, why wasn't Scotty matched up with Rory every time? Because, like, Rory's unstoppable and Scotty Scheffler's the number one golfer in the world. Mm-hmm. But Scotty didn't play like the number one golfer in the world. So, like, it's a game of hypotheticals, but you think if Scotty Scheffler is in matches against Rory the entire time, he probably doesn't pick up any wins. Mm-hmm. Or you can be from the camp that Scotty's only win came when in the only match when he played against Rory McIlroy. So maybe playing against Rory would have given him the impetus to win a couple of more in the first 2 days. Yeah, so the first of his four losses, both two of the first of his losses coming that day, the U.S. kind of saved a little bit by Schauffele and Cantlay in that fourth match, winning 17 and 18 to win two up. Salvaging points anywhere they can. But moving into day two, it didn't get much better. Foursomes and four ball both go 3-1 to the European side. And after day two, Europe had an 11.5-point to 4.5-point lead, a 7-point difference between Team Europe and Team USA. And this day was when things got a little more interesting, I suppose we could say, in terms of the fan interactions. As the U.S. continued to plateau in performance, the fans got increasingly vulgar, we can say. And obviously, like, we'll get into that more after day three. But much closer foursomes round for Scotty in this one. But he and Russell Henley couldn't retie Victor Hovland and Robert McIntyre after they won 14. They tied holes 15 through 18 at the end of that match for Hovland and McIntyre to hold on. It's really cool to see guys like Hovland and like Oberg playing such crucial roles on this European team.
I mean,
you
Hovland
look at day
won
three,
them. He won them the Ryder Cup with his neck injury. sorry.
I suppose. But yeah, you go with Hovland on day two, him and McIntyre getting that big win, looking like ahead to day three. Oberg was the only man on Team Europe to actually win his single, and that was a huge point. But yeah, day two saw another Morikawa and English foursome against McIlroy and Fleetwood. I have to imagine he sets these lineups like beforehand, like mm-hmm. way beforehand, and just doesn't think about changing them after day one. But I mean, after Morikawa and English versus McIlroy and Fleetwood day one, do you really run it back the second day if there's not an option to like change it up? I'm not 100% if he had an option to change it, but I imagine he could have maybe shuffled some things around and gotten a different look. Vanessa, what do you think about day two?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really like seeing how the gap got bigger. And I really had hopes going into it that they would just redeem themselves after day one.
I mean, DeChambeau and Cameron Young gave us a lot of hope.
Yeah.
In that first match.
Yeah. And that was the one that I was looking forward to the most, and they came out with the win. If I was in the situation where I could change lineups, I would not have done the Morikawa and English against Fleetwood Mac. I would have made changes. Especially because they lost. Like, you would think that they would want to try and do a different pairing to at least get a point, you know?
And they had complete control of that match as well, did Fleetwood Mac, as you said, liked that one. They were, what is that, four up at the turn? Like, that's ridiculous. And Morikawa and English managed to put together a couple of holes on 14 and 15, but it finished 3-2. It was 3-2 to John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton against Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. That was kind of an interesting match on the front nine. But then, obviously, the back, Rahm and Hatton really locked things down. John Rahm had a really, really
insane.
Nice tournament.
Yeah. Absolutely
we talk about
insane.
The chipping.
His first two
what
days.
How is he getting that chipping going out of literally nowhere?
Yeah.
These are not things we see out of John Rahm, and he's just chipping it in out of the bunker like it's his job.
Yeah. I actually want to circle back to the Scotty point quickly because
yeah.
my big thing with how he played this weekend is if you go back to he won, was it the BMW that he won a couple months ago?
He won a lot.
I think it was the BMW when Fleetwood was up going into day three, like by five. And then Scotty ended up coming back and winning it. The thing about Scotty Scheffler is he always plays his best golf on day three of a tournament or the last day of a tournament. Like, he's always hanging up right around, you know, the top. You're always, if there's a graphic on the screen, Scotty's name's going to be in there, but it's not always going to be number one until day three.
Scheffler's always lurking.
He's always lurking, and then he pulls it together day three. The problem in a tournament like the Ryder Cup is because of how, like, it's a points and team system. If you fall behind, you're kind of screwed. So I think Scotty's getting way too much, and maybe I'm a Scotty Scheffler defender, but I think he's getting way too much criticism because also he had the toughest matchups most days, obviously not playing against Rory, but I think he didn't play his best golf, certainly, but I don't think he played as bad as people are making it seem like he played.
Yeah, and Scotty, even himself, when he spoke to media after the Ryder Cup was over, Scotty said that he, like, his mindset on Saturday night after losing four matches in a row was, like, really, really negative. He got hit hard by that occurring because he knows that he's the number one golfer in the world, and he knows how much Team USA was relying on him for points on those first 2 days, and to not come through for your teammates, it's like it's an awful feeling. Mm-hmm. That's at least that's what he told the everyone with the press who was there, and he did say that the team, like, kind of came around him and supported him, and that's what made him able to win against Rory on Sunday, was that, like, team cohesion around him after going 0-4. But, like, honestly, for me, it is good that you feel that way, because you are the number one golfer in the world, and yeah, if you lose four straight matches at the Ryder Cup, you should feel bad about it, and you should feel like you let your team down, because in essence you did.
And not only that, they were home. They're, yes, in front of their home crowd, and playing the way that he performed and played, and you're playing like that in front of pretty much the entire U.S., it's upsetting. It's disappointing, especially as a fan, and you're watching the number one golfer who is on your team perform like that. It's one of the most disappointing things to see.
After so much success over the past year and a half to 2 years as well, like, this is the guy who the United States has already looked to in international golf. Like, he has an Olympic gold medal, so, like, you kind of figure in international play, it should be pretty comfortable. But it didn't turn out that way. And, you know, the Team USA needed him. And, I mean, still, showing up on Sunday was huge. I think if we're going to criticize him for the first 2 days, we at least have to give him his flowers for Sunday, because he did beat Rory McIlroy in a very high leverage spot. Like, say Oberg doesn't manage to pull that win out on Sunday, and the USA has a shot at maybe jumping the Europeans by a half a point. That would have been one of the most ridiculous comebacks, like, probably in sports, mm-hmm, in general.
Yeah.
The fact that they even got it back to within 2 points is pretty ridiculous.
Well, I think that's right where Keegan Bradley outsmarted Luke Donald, is the fact that all of the European golfers were so exhausted by Sunday. Like, Rory couldn't, like, the reason Scotty was able to, in the end, like, come away with it in, you know, a less stressful fashion than some of the other matches is because Rory could not hit the ball. Like, the guy was just so tired. Where I know Scotty also played, you know, an equivalent number, but the same with Jon Rahm. Like, the European golfers were a bit overworked, where the U.S. weren't as much, and that's why they were able to have such a good Sunday, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose that does bring us into Sunday. We got there a little bit early, but day three, USA trailing by 7, and at 11.5 points, the EU needed just 2.5 points to retain the trophy. Anything more than that, they would win outright. And the USA, actually, they won the day 8.5 points to 2.5. Landslide win.
Such
in
a fun
singles
day of golf
for the U.S. And, yeah, it was a fun, yeah, day of golf, like, especially for the fans in attendance, because the ticket prices went in the floor, mm-hmm, after day two, rightfully so, because it was a large gap. But the fans who decided to come out on Sunday, like, if they made that decision after the U.S. went down, they were in for a treat.
And it's great to know some Europeans wasted their money.
Hey, they still won.
They got some gray hairs in the process as well, so did they really win?
I mean, scoreboard. The Europeans won 15-3, their second straight Ryder Cup, their sixth Ryder Cup in the last eight. That's since 2010, and their 16th win all time, with the USA leading the all time series. USA has 27 Ryder Cup wins to Europe's 16, but Europe has clearly had the better of the last 15 years or so, if not the last 20 plus. Yeah, Scotty did get Rory in singles, which was huge. Cam Young beat Justin Rose one up, and like crowning a very nice weekend for Cameron Young as well. He played
Fordham Prep kid.
Excellent golf. Shout out Cameron Young for going to Fordham Prep. He put on an absolute show in any setting. Four ball foursomes and singles. Cameron Young was on point all weekend. Justin Thomas beat Tommy Fleetwood in the second match. That was electric.
That was
especially
the best
winning
moment.
One up,
yeah,
on 18. Justin Thomas hyping up the crowd. That was so, so insane. I love how emotional that Justin Thomas gets when he plays golf.
It was unreal.
And is like allowed to emote.
I think he's my favorite Ryder Cup like player.
Because he gets he gets so tilted too. Like he'll get really, really angry at himself, and then like two holes later, he's like hyping up the crowd.
All the edits before this Ryder Cup were literally just JT and Bryson. Like, you just like, that was like every single social media US post you saw, it was just them two.
TGL may have been one of the greatest things that ever happened to Justin Thomas. It turned him into like a total fan favorite and crowd work genius. It's unbelievable. But Bryson DeChambeau tied up Matt Fitzpatrick, and he made a massive comeback to force that tie. Fitzpatrick was 5-up through 7, and then DeChambeau won on 8, 9, 14, 15, and 17 with ties the rest of the way to tie the match on the hole. Like, incredible from DeChambeau to keep that as a half point each. Scheffler, of course, in the fourth match, 1-up over Rory McIlroy. That one's close all the way through. There were only five holes out of the 18 that one of them actually won. It's a really, really even matchup there. Patrick Cantlay was the only American player to lose his match in singles to Ludvig Åberg, who won 2-1. Schauffele won 4-3 over Jon Rahm. J.J. Spaun 2-1 over Sepp Straka. Russell Henley and Shane Lowry tied, and of course that match was It gave Europe the half points that they needed. And yeah, I mean, like, when you look at this scorecard in this match, Russell Henley, he was 2-up after the 14th hole, after going win-win on 13 and 14. Shane Lowry comes right back on 15, then ties 16-17 in that 18th hole. Henley leaves it a little short.
He had two chances to win the match, not tie it.
Yeah, and then Lowry brought it back, and that was what did it for Europe. They got that last half point that they needed with Lowry. He got to celebrate on the green, which was a cool moment because he, like Rory, also caught a large majority of the heckles from fans this weekend.
Yeah, but Lowry's a lot more lovable of a golfer.
I think so.
Than Rory is. Yeah.
Really just don't like Rory.
I do not like Rory.
In the ninth match, Ben Griffin won 1-up over Rasmus Højgaard. Colin Morikawa tied Tyrrell Hatton. Sam Burns tied Robert McIntyre. And Harris English tied Victor Hovland. Although that 12th match, I'm not sure they actually bothered to play it because Europe had already won. So, day three. Like, outside of the fact that the U.S. stormed back to make this, like, to turn this into a tournament again, what was the most interesting that stood out from day three? And I suppose from the whole tournament, now that we've gotten through all 3 days, Thomas, we could start with you here.
Focusing specifically on Sunday, I remember watching it, like, with just, like, an inkling of hope. Just seeing Cameron Young go out there, win hole one, that sort of just sets the tone for the rest of the match. And that's something you wanted Scotty to do throughout the tournament, was sort of just set the tone. And Cameron Young did a great job of that throughout the weekend. But the comeback from DeChambeau, I think, was arguably the most impressive thing. And I think that was the match that gave the U.S. the most hope. Because being 5-down through 7, like, I thought DeChambeau was just going to forfeit at the turn, just get it over with. But to credit to him for staying in the game, battling back, hitting that putt on 17 and having a chance to win on 18. I think that was a defining moment of this Sunday. And unfortunately, the U.S. just couldn't do enough. But the thing that irritated me the most was the Hovland withdrawal.
Yeah.
And the EU getting a half point, because that's absurdly ridiculous that, you know,
his neck was fine too.
Yeah. Like you could just make up an injury, and the EU knowing that they only had to win one game and have a point to win the whole thing instead of winning two matches. It just changed the whole dynamic.
Yeah. It changes from like 2.5 needed to retain to now automatically it's just 2.
Yeah, which I think it's unfair to the U.S. team. I mean, it's their fault they're in this position, but that's ridiculous. And another point, talking about the entire Ryder Cup format, I think it's also absurd that if the EU only ended up with 14, that they still win. I think that's ridiculous. Thing, yeah. That
you think a draw should be like nobody wins the cup?
No, I think they should
overtime
be a playoff.
Or
you know
yeah.
how they do an envelope rule? Yeah. I think they just need to pick two golfers that if they're
that
tied,
would be awesome.
Like Scotty and Rory, going three hole playoff.
If they managed to pick Scotty and Rory out of a hat, there would be they froze
no,
the envelope.
They
allegations.
Or they can have the captains like pick their top.
Yeah, like you know yeah. how they had the
I like
envelope,
pick your champion.
Yeah. And
I
even if it's just one hole or something, or it's just sudden death overtime.
Because you shouldn't be rewarded for last Ryder Cup's yeah. performance. I think that's
sudden
ridiculous.
Death overtime eliminator. So like it's one hole at a time, mm-hmm. but once you pick a golfer from your team, they're out
again.
And you have to
oh,
pick somebody else.
That, yeah.
And it goes through until everybody goes once. If you're somehow still
that's
tied
like the
after
NHL
the whole
shootout
team plays, do it again.
Format.
It is a little bit like a shootout, but I think that would be an interesting
yeah.
way to develop that. I don't know. I feel like we need to write like a strongly worded email to the Ryder Cup now about them changing this, because that seems like a really good idea. But Vanessa, you were there on day 3. What was the in-person experience like at the Ryder Cup on Sunday?
I gotta say, with how far we were down, it did not seem like that in the slightest. You know, I was going in, you know, it was my first live golf experience and I didn't know what to expect. And I was driving there with my dad and he was just like, don't expect a lot of people to be there just because of the big gap and whatever. So we got there pretty early. There weren't a lot of people at the time. And then once we went over to the tee box, it was absolutely insane. Completely packed. Everyone's cheering. You've got all of the best rock hits being played. There was even a moment where Freebird was playing and the guitar solo was going and you just see 6 fighter jets just fly over everybody. That was probably the most patriotic I've
they
ever
had to
felt.
Fly over during Freebird?
Like
that's so electric.
On cue. Like completely the second that guitar solo started, you just see the 6 fighter jets just fly over.
Unbelievable.
And then walking out to Thunderstruck was also amazing.
Oh my gosh. Lydia, what do you take away from day 3?
Definitely the biggest takeaway is, well, the European team was all returners except for one, I believe. The U.S. had it's funny calling like JJ Spahn and like Cam Young like rookies, but like they were rookies.
Ryder Cup rookies. Yeah.
I mean, I think like obviously if they played a little bit better the first 2 days, this is they're right there with Europe, and even though the recent success hasn't been there, I like their chances in 2027. But kind of a cool story. So I feel like going into the Ryder Cup, Americans knew that we weren't the favorite. It was kind of a long shot to win, and I think our hope was just to make it competitive Sunday because that's where the most points are available and that's ultimately the best day. So my boss was telling me a story that they were at hole 15 on Sunday, and the network has like a 15-second delay, so they just kept hearing screaming coming from hole 18. So there's like 15 seconds where you're just like, did they make a putt? Did they miss a putt?
Every
did
time
Europe just
somebody
win?
Finishes.
Yeah, is it Europe like celebrating the Ryder Cup? Is it the U.S. comeback? So they were just like apparently like glued to that TV because they had no idea. And with the delay too, you're just sitting there like, what the heck is about to happen? Is the tournament over, or are we climbing back into this thing? And I just thought that was a really cool, probably stressful moment for them. And that's just what the Ryder Cup's about. It's a super fun tournament, and I know we're gonna get into, you know, the fans and all that, but I think it was a great weekend of golf and just great publicity for the sport, to be honest.
Everything that I think we could have hoped for, with a little bit that we didn't.
Yeah.
They've been talking up this tournament ever since the end of the PGA season, ever since the end of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Like, the ratings should be good for this.
Especially since it went all the way to 5 o'clock on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, it should definitely, 100%. This was a great tournament to watch, especially because of what transpired on Sunday and how the U.S. crawled back into it. If it was just a complete blowout on Sunday, I feel like people's eyes would not have been on this tournament as much. But really, I felt like there were a lot of people in the United States who both knew about this tournament and intended to watch at least 2 days worth. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing for golf. Next year should be fun, and 2027 should be really, really fun. It's going to Ireland.
Yeah.
And County Limerick. But yeah, we do have to address a couple of the storylines from the weekend. One of them being fan interactions. Yay. So this was probably one of the, this is like a, it's really weird to talk about because a lot of media is trying to make this like a black mark on the entire tournament and try to ruin everything with it. But I think we have to look at what happened during the tournament and the golf that was played and the result of the tournament and be really happy with, like, on-course performance and all of that.
Yeah.
But then still, like, at the end here, we do still have to address, like, I want to say the handful of fans, but again, I'm not sure how many honestly participated. But if you watch the event or if you follow it on social media, you know that there were some fans at the Ryder Cup who made it their mission to effectively just verbally abuse the European team, particularly Rory McIlroy and his wife, Erica, who, of course, had a very public, like, issue with regards to their marriage earlier on in this year. That was resolved, and they are, like, I assume they're good now. But still, this became, like, part of the ammunition and a little bit of the context for all of this. And then according to the Telegraph and also the Mirror US, Team Europe was at one point ready to stop playing at the tournament if the fan behavior continued to deteriorate. I'm thinking this was sometime around, like, between Saturday and Sunday. Yeah. So they were threatening not to play during the singles section on Sunday. But then just today, it was reported that the PGA of America president, Don Ray Jr., apologized to Team Europe and to Rory McIlroy specifically for the, quote, distasteful, end quote, behavior of some American fans. He also apologized for a statement that he made during the event to the BBC that kind of brushed off the notion of, like, foul and abusive fan interactions as, like, commonplace. He referenced the 2023 tournament in Rome as, like, the European fans were doing something similar, but at the end of the day, they just weren't, or just weren't nearly as abusive as some of the U.S. fans at this year's tournament. For me, I'd feel like when some of the American fans act like sore losers, we all look like sore losers. So I am frankly pretty embarrassed over any of this happening, just because, like I said, I wear the American flag on my shirt today for the audio listeners. Love you to death.
I got red, white, and blue too.
Lydia's got red, white, and blue. We all have blue on in some capacity. All American fans should be at least partially embarrassed by what transpired, I think, because we've gotten to a point where the president of the PGA of America had to come and make a statement. And the CEO himself, like, went to personally apologize to Team Europe and to Rory. For me, I'm just a little bit embarrassed about it. I'm all for bringing energy and chirping opposing teams, but really, I would say, like, we got to leave family out of it.
Yeah,
you can chirp Rory all day, but you do not need to bring Erica into it in any way, shape, or form. And plus, EU fans had chance in their bag for days. The only thing that American fans could come up was expletive you, Rory. That's it. That's all they could come up with. I'm like, I'm both embarrassed and a little bit disappointed by this situation with the like,
lack of
some
creativity
of the American fans.
Yeah.
Happy with the tournament overall, but what were your guys' thoughts on this whole fan situation? Vanessa, we could start with you here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even just around sports that you can just see that the heckling has gotten to a point where it's becoming more personal. You know, as a avid baseball watcher, there's been a lot of instances in the past couple of years where it's just getting progressively more personal.
Just this year, look at the Jaren Duran situation.
Oh, yeah. The Jaren Duran situation. There was a situation on the Diamondbacks where some fan brought up a situation with a player's mom who passed in a car accident. I believe that was the story. I don't think it's, I mean, listen, to play devil's advocate here, I mean, Rory was kind of playing into the heckling.
Completely.
I mean, so part of it is, I think, a tiny little sliver is his fault because, you know, he's playing into it and he's instigating the fans to do more. I don't think Erica should have been involved, especially when the beer was thrown at her. I think that was completely uncalled for and inappropriate. And
is that where we're at with that, by the way? Because I didn't do the digging that you told me to do, Lydia. I didn't go into the depths of Twitter. Was it hit out of their
yeah,
hands?
Yeah, and I don't think the two people knew each other. I think Rory was like walking by and someone has like a drink in his hand and then someone else goes to like yell like something to Rory and the drink went out of the hand. Like you could see it was like a left hand and a right hand coming from the other side.
But given the situation, given the context of the whole situation, I feel like if a beer is flying through the air towards Erica,
and some people aren't chronically
with
on Twitter,
everything that's
and
been
no
going
one
on,
said anything either.
Exactly. So it's kind of like we have to make some assumptions here.
And also
in the
fact that like the story is not totally confirmed unless it is. I could
There's
be wrong.
There's just like videos on Twitter about
gotcha.
It. You have to be like addicted to Twitter, like
you have like five angles saved on your phone right now.
Oh yeah, they're all in bookmarks. Like, just so if I see a European, I'm like, It was hit out of the guy's hand.
I'm looking at the slow-mo replay right now, and it looks like he throws it.
You got it. You got to find the other angles.
Tilt it this way. We got a live footage review, and where's it come in? Oh.
That's not the super slow-mo, though.
That is incredibly
it's not a slow-mo. You have to have it from the back angle, too.
You're right. In post, we can throw this in for the video.
That's a great idea.
And actually just throw the clip in there. But that is, that arc, the arc on that can, it's spinning a little bit. I don't know if that was like, if something made contact
I'll
with that.
Find,
I feel
I'll
like
have
that may have been like tossed a little bit.
Because at first I was like, oh yeah, like why would someone throw that? And then if you go to like the comment sections, that's where people like reply with different clips and that's where you can get the other angles.
The close-up pictures
we're talking physics here, like
we've presented plenty of evidence here but we'll let the audience at home make their own determination. We won't make any determinations here about whether or not that was an intentional however the case remains the same. A beer hit Rory's wife. So we have a problem.
And it fits into the narrative. Like I think it's incredibly disheartening that we're even having a conversation about, because like if we were respectful to Rory and apart from, you know, a couple heckles, then I think we could give the person the benefit of the doubt saying, oh, he didn't mean to throw that beer can. But I think concerning the rhetoric around Rory, it definitely feels intentional just because of all the stuff the US fans had been doing before. Like it is totally within, you know, the framework that someone would throw a beer can at.
And they had brought in more security. They brought in the state troopers from New York to, like, beef up Rory's security specifically. Where, I mean, like, a few golfers from both sides have said that they weren't really worried about, like, actual physical danger, but, like, the words were still pretty biting. But then you see something like this, and it's like, wait, do we actually have, like, a physical danger issue?
And it's always like you got to prepare for the worst-case scenario.
Exactly.
And you're like, is this the worst-case scenario? Is it not?
Can it get worse?
Can it get worse?
And
that's
how?
That's what I was worried about on Sunday. I mean, there were state troopers, especially in that first tee box, completely circled around it. And you could definitely, there was just a huge number. Even when the entrance there had to have been about like 10 different state troopers. They were all over the place at each hole. They were guarding the different walkways too. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And nothing, I don't think really anything crazy happened on Sunday, at least from what I saw. I mean, of course, there was like the occasional heckling went after the drive, and that was pretty funny.
Get in the bunker.
Get in the bunker.
Or the loud ew after the
get in the bunker was killing me.
Get in the bunker is crazy. I don't mind that's ew. That's kind of funny. Get in the bunker is kind of evil.
That's a funny chirp though. That's
like,
creative.
That's like, it's gotta be like rule 5 or rule 6 in like the golf etiquette handbook, is you just don't wish for other people's balls to go in the bunker, because then like your next ball is going right in the bunker.
Yeah, but this is some guy with like a 30 handicap yelling that, who only goes out on Sundays to like drink some beers with the boys. Like, he'll be fine.
Watching Sunday football.
Put a couple balls in the
phone.
Water.
Yeah, he'll be fine. But I guess it's fitting that I answer the question last about the fans, because I probably am the most opinionated about this. I think if you take two golfers, you take Rory McIlroy, you take Tommy Fleetwood. Tommy Fleetwood came out with a long response. He was like, yeah, there was a couple fans that crossed the line, but that's what you get with these tournaments, especially putting it in New York, where some of the most passionate sports fans come from.
Yeah. You're expecting, Keegan Bradley used that defense as
well. You're like, Tommy Fleetwood saying this. He's like, you're expecting, mm-hmm. you know, some things to get out of hand. That's like the beauty of these tournaments, is that it brings the, you know, the passion out of the fans. And you know, those couple fans shouldn't represent like a country as a whole. I mean, all these guys live in the U.S. Like, let's remember that too. That, yeah, they're Team Europe, but they're all, I mean, PGA's here for the most part. So, I mean, Fleetwood and said all these good things about the tournament and obviously getting the win. He's like, you know, the best way to shut the fans up is just by winning. So you have this, and Fleetwood was heckled a bit. I mean, not to the extent Rory was, but people just respect him because he comes out and he says statements like this. Where then you have Rory McIlroy being like, who already has a bad reputation, you know, being a overly passionate golfer and stuff like that, throwing clubs and whatnot. You have him coming on and saying, it's just, you know, that's not what golf's about and all that stuff. But then you see him putting the flag over Bryson DeChambeau, who he didn't even play against. Matt Fitzpatrick did. And Fitzpatrick was also like, whoa, like, I blew a 5. You know, I was up 5. Like, I can't fully be chirping Bryson here. Like, why? There's so many, like, other places to, you know, show off the European flag. Why are you just calling out Bryson? You know, I know they have a little bit of tension, but that's like, you can't behave like that and then be like surprised when Americans are kind of zooming in on a lens. Yes, that doesn't justify crossing a line, potentially throwing something at his wife, but he can't act all innocent in this, because Tommy Fleetwood's innocent because he treats people with respect and plays the game how it should be played, where Rory doesn't. And that's all I'll say.
And you also had him, you know, pointing at the scoreboard and even yelling at
He's
fans
been
back.
Known to have a temper. Yeah. Not just in the Ryder Cup, in PGA events as well.
He does a little bit of trolling.
But fans should know where the line is. Like, we're all adults here.
I agree with that. But I think, you know, just because the tournament was in New York and was in America, and we have, like, the strongest media here too, that things were way more publicized than it will be even in 2 years in Ireland.
Maybe, yeah. But I also just think that when they go to Ireland, the fans in Ireland just aren't going to be nearly as abrasive
Ireland could be rowdy,
as the fans from New York.
But definitely not New
rowdy,
York. Yeah.
But like, if you're
they like their Guinness there.
If you're like if you're the Team Europe fans right now,
well now you know you're on best behavior.
But yeah, you just got handed like an opportunity on a silver platter to just completely
show up
outclass
the
American fans in 2027, because they're going to show up. They're going to be the most respectful human beings known to man, and they're going to chant the whole time, but only positively and only for Team Europe, and like maybe occasionally chirp the Americans, but still they're gonna, like you said, they're gonna be on their best behavior and they're gonna make us look foolish. But that means in 2029 the American fans just have to come back. I think, is that gonna be a Hazeltine? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, I think so.
Which, kind of annoying that they're going back there again. Like, can we mix it up, please? But either way, yeah, the Rory, a bit of a Rory crash out. in this one too. He wasn't all innocent the whole time. He turns around,
was never innocent.
Throws the expletive right back at the fans one hole.
I hate you, Rory.
Which is on it for me, I feel like it's why not? And like why are we mad at this like little momentary lapse from Rory? He didn't even blow up
much. I'm not mad at it, but just don't act like
fire.
Exactly. Don't act like you didn't do anything. Like I love it. I love Rory's passion in that regard. Yeah, but you gotta give and take. He's pointing fingers.
I still think his crash out was a little bit more warranted, if we can even call it a crash out. It's just, literally just like a tiny response. But I still think the general sentiment among golf fans is that
U.S. behavior needs to be better.
Well, that, and I think they just want the Ryder Cup to become more respectful in general. Maybe it is just the U.S. fans, but if the U.S. is going to make claims like multiple players and like their captain Keegan Bradley have made that the fans in Europe in 2023 were doing something similar to this, maybe there just needs to be like a general change of attitude among Ryder Cup fans. Like, mm-hmm. still bring the energy, but like just take a step back with the chirps. We'll see what happens in 2027, though. I think that just about wraps us up here. We got through like all the storylines. I think we want to talk about. Like, is there anything you guys have for this Ryder Cup? Like, last thoughts?
No, I don't really got anything. It was a fun weekend. I was glad the U.S. made it competitive on Sunday, and overall, I'm looking forward to 2027.
I think the way that they've handled this whole fan situation, even in the aftermath, has been extremely professional.
Yeah.
So I think that it's been handled in a way that doesn't take away.
They took business communications too
from
at
the
Fordham.
Yeah.
Which I'm in right now.
Yeah,
crisis management.
They didn't take away from what the tournament that we got, and I thought it was a really successful tournament with a great turnout and all the energy that you want and expect out of the Ryder Cup. So anything for you guys before we wrap here?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that sentiment. You know, of course, I wish the U.S. would have won, especially seeing everything in person and how electric it was all 3 days. You could see it on the TV. You could see it there. I really do got to say kudos to them, though. You know, for the most part, I was just hanging out on hole 15. And one of the things I really did not expect was how elevated the green was and how much of a slant the traps were. And they were enormous, too. And, you know, it was really amazing to see just pro golf in person and, you know, how to strategize around those different obstacles. And just, you know, unfortunately, again, the U.S. lost, and I'm really having high hopes for 2027. I hope that they can come out with a win. I don't want a three-peat. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, if I hear that Europe's on fire thing ever, I had an intramural basketball game the other day, and someone was playing Freed from Desire on the speaker, and all I could hear is Rory just being like, USA is terrified. I was gonna lose it.
That yeah.
I was gonna lose
every
it.
Time they play the song. I literally cannot unhear it.
Yeah,
it's a nightmare. Thomas, anything?
The atmosphere was great, and I understand that it crossed the line at some points. But one issue I have is that our chants as a USA fan base are just not up to scratch.
Hey, no,
like, they
not
are
even
so
close.
Incredibly
they are really
poor.
Dry.
And you know, you can say, and I think we should have better heckles like "F you, Rory." Just doesn't carry the same
weight
as
like
the European.
Was that the 7 a.m. like chant that they started that
I,
one day
I think
or
so.
Something?
Like one of the
that was
that
actually
was bad.
That was actually a chant that one of the announcers, I think, one of like the starters or like
MC,
like a celebrity MC.
That was a tough watch.
Started that chant on like Saturday and had to resign from their position by Sunday.
Like half the people
crazy.
Weren't even doing it because they were like, "What?
Wild?
Yeah,
that's crazy."
But we do need better chance.
Yeah, we just got to be more creative. And some of the stuff, like when they hit a dry, like saying four every time, just like it gets old to a certain point. And Baba Booey, like that irks me to no end. Like,
I mean, mashed potatoes.
I mean, like, for crying out loud, we got ChatGPT here. We got all these different AI sources to come out with different heckles.
If we really can't think of something,
exactly.
Or if we're like, Too drunk at the pregame to think of something, just go hammer the AI chant.
We have 4 years to figure something out.
Yeah, come on.
That's what's
true.
Happening right now is
maybe that's a new like role, like chant coordinator.
Maybe
PGA's
it needs to be looked into.
Implement it. Maybe for the Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
maybe PGA just the Ryder Cup.
anyway, that is just about going to wrap us up for the Ryder Cup special, a very special edition of On the Green. For Thomas Tisdale, for Vanessa Kosuda, for Lydia Perner, and for our producer, Henry Wolf, I have been Tucker Austin, and we will catch you guys next time.